Good day, everyone, everywhere, and special greetings to all those seated in heavenly places in Yahshua, Jesus, our Messiah. The name of this program is Cross the Border, and my name is Nicholas. We've been going through the Bible, and we've ended up in the book of Daniel. It took a couple days to talk about interpretation of the beasts and other symbols in both Daniel and Revelation, since the two books are so closely tied together in their symbols and their prophecy. Today we're going to jump back into Daniel, beginning at chapter 7 and verse 1. Before I do that, I'd like to invite you to visit my website. It's crosstheborder.org. And send me an email there just to let me know you're listening, or if you have any questions, comments, find the email link there and do send me an email. I would like to hear from you. Well, let's jump right in to Daniel chapter 7 and verse 1. In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream and visions of his head upon his bed. Then he wrote the dream and told the sum of the matters. Now we have here a verse that tells us that he wrote the dream and he told the sum of the matters, which gives us a date for the book of Daniel and when it was written. I know that many so-called scholars and skeptics have come up in the last couple hundred years and have decided that Daniel's prophecies were just too good. They were just too accurate, that he could not have written them beforehand, that he must have written them after the fact. Now, these skeptics and critics, of course, they preclude the fact that there is a God, a creator, who can communicate with the men that he has created and tell them the future, even in the cryptic sense of these prophecies. So even the skeptics realize the value and the accuracy of Daniel's prophecies, so much so that they just don't want to believe that he wrote these things before the fact, but they wrote them after the fact. I don't want to get into that argument today, but I do want to address it just briefly. The skeptics have been answered, and there's a lot of problems with their the conclusions that they come to. So if you want to look into that, you can look up dating Daniel in any search engine and look into that for yourself and come to your own conclusion. But if you love the truth, the conclusion that you'll come to is the skeptics have more problems in dating Daniel later than the believers do in dating Daniel earlier. Anyway, Daniel records it here for us that it was the first year of Belteshazzar when he had the dream. And he wrote the dream, and he told the sum of the matters. And, of course, he told that in his writing. In verse 2, Daniel spoke and said, I saw in my vision by night, and beheld, the four winds of the heaven strove upon the great sea. Now, we've learned, and we were discussing through our interpretation, that, of course, the sea represents many people. And the winds striving upon the sea means that there is tumult, wars, and there's a lot of strife between the peoples of the nations on the earth. And that's basically what we have here. And he continues, and four great beasts came up from the sea, diverse one from another. So we know that these, and the word diverse, of course, is an old English word that people don't use very much today, though it is still in use today, and it still means the same thing. Actually, most people would say different. Diverse one from another means that they were very different from one another, meaning that they weren't the same because they had different origins, and we'll see that. That it wasn't one beast that had one origin that kept morphing into something else. No, but they were different from one another. They had different origins, and that's why they're represented by four different beasts. Verse 4, the first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. And I beheld till the wings thereof were plucked, and it was lifted up from the earth and made to stand upon the feet as a man, and a man's heart was given to it. So there, you know, that's a very graphic picture. You have a lion. It has eagle's wings. The wings were plucked off, and then it was lifted up from the earth and made to stand upon the feet as a man. So you have a lion that has reared up on its hinds like a man and stands, and a man's heart was given to it. And Daniel's seeing this picture, a very graphic picture. And he continues, and I beheld, in verse 5, another beast, a second, like to a bear. It raised up itself on one side, and it had three ribs in the mouth of it, between teeth of it. And they said thus unto it, arise, devour much flesh. So another very graphic image there. A bear raised up on one side. It has three ribs in its mouth and between its teeth. And they said, whoever they are, to it, arise, devour much flesh. So that's what's being said to the bear. And after this, so there's a definite separation between each one of these beast images that Daniel's receiving in this dream that he wrote down, and he's telling us the sum of the matters, as he said. So after this, I beheld, and lo, another, like a leopard, which had the back of it four wings of a fowl. The beast also had four heads, and dominion was given to it. And then after this, I saw in the night vision, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, strong exceedingly. So this was exceedingly strong. And it had great iron teeth, and devoured and broke in pieces, and it stamped the residue with the feet of it. And it was diverse from all the beasts that were before it. So it was different. This beast, all the other beasts were different from one another, but somehow this one was different than the other three before it. So it was diverse from all the other beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. And I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them another little horn. So we have 10 horns, and then there's a little horn that came up among them. So somehow the other horns are big in comparison, so because he notes that this is a little horn. So what does that mean? We'll have to discuss that too. And he says, before whom there were three of the first horns plucked up by the roots. So you have 10 horns, three are plucked up by the roots, and he continues, and behold, in this horn, speaking of the little horn, before whom three were of the first horns were plucked up by the roots, were the eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking great things. Well, let's stop there for a minute, and let's go back and look at each of these beasts here in succession. The lion, that's the first beast. Is that the first beast? Go back here and back up, and we'll just jump back and do each one. Four beasts. The first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. So that's the one we're going to discuss first. The lion of Daniel 7 was no ordinary lion because it had the wings of an eagle on its back. Real lions, of course, do not have eagle's wings. So clearly, this is a symbol of some type. The four beasts of Daniel 7 parallel the four kingdoms of Daniel 2, if you'll remember, as we went through Daniel 2. And of course, we're speaking of the dream of the image that Nebuchadnezzar had, which Daniel was able to retell to Nebuchadnezzar and then give the interpretation of. So we find that the Daniel 7, the four beasts parallel the four kingdoms of the beast image from Nebuchadnezzar's dream. So it is logical that the first beast that Daniel saw, the lion, corresponds to the head of gold on the image in Daniel 2, which we are told represented Nebuchadnezzar. We are also told that each metal represented a kingdom. Therefore, the lion Daniel saw represented both Nebuchadnezzar and Babylon. So the question is, why are there eagle's wings on the back of this lion? Well, there's several reasons why eagle's wings appear on the back of the lion. To understand these reasons, it is worthwhile to do a bit of study of the symbolism involved. And we spent a couple days looking at that. An eagle is a predatory bird. that will attack suddenly from the air. Though their prey is often on the ground, sometimes they attack other birds in flight, perhaps killing them in the process. In addition, eagles in particular tend to spend a lot of time soaring high in the sky, gaining lift from rising thermal currents of air that can carry them upwards. And, you know, this gets into the characteristics principle that we talked about, one of the principles that we talked about over the last couple days when we were discussing these principles. So we want to look into the characteristics. Why are there eagle's wings specifically on the back of this lion? So we have to look at an eagle to see why. Such birds can often rise far above other birds. They have very good eyesight. They can easily spot an attack opportunity from far away. The wings on the lion therefore represent that this animal easily spotted an attack opportunity and took advantage of it. In Daniel and Revelation, winds can represent a commotion among the nations of the world, like wars and rumors of wars. Familiar. So the winds, through warfare, it shows the striving of the four winds upon the waters. And we saw that in Daniel chapter 7 and verse 2. Thermal uplifts are the winds in motion in an upward direction. So this shows that the Babylonians were able to ride the commotion among the nations of the world and rise above the rest of them through warfare so as to be able to gain control of them. The eagle's wings represent Babylon soaring above the other nations, and because of this, it would be able to attack at will whenever it spotted an opportunity. Of course, that cannot be literal, because nations do not literally soar in the air like a bird. To correctly understand this means it is well to remember that the angel explained to Daniel that the beasts are four kings, so one beast should correspond with one king. Therefore, we know that the characteristics of soaring into the air applied to the leader of Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar. This represents that the leader of Babylon was a smarter man than his contemporaries, and as a result, he would be ahead of their game, whatever it was, and would win military victories against them where others would be more likely to fail. He would be more successful in taking advantage of opportunities provided by the unrest among the nations around him than anyone else, which would allow him to rise above the opposition, certainly eagle-like for this reason. We do know from history that Babylon was very successful in creating and expanding its kingdom. Much of this was owed to the military genius of Nebuchadnezzar. He knew a good attack opportunity when he saw one and moved to take advantage of it wherever possible. He suffered few setbacks in his military campaigns. The eagle's wings also represent that God was involved in directing the affairs of nations. God controlled events so as to make Babylon a kingdom, and says that he gave the kingdom of Babylon to Nebuchadnezzar. We have that evidence from the scripture. And we have here in Exodus 19:4, it says, "You have seen what I did to the Egyptians, how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself." So anyway, that's something that we may consider there. Yahuwah, God, directly involved himself in bringing the Israelites out of Egypt because it was his power and action that brought them freedom from the Egyptians. The direct action of God created the nation Israel. In Exodus 19:4, the eagle's wings symbolize the direct involvement of God in the affairs of Egypt so as to create the nation of Israel. In like manner, in Daniel 7, eagle's wings can symbolize God's direct involvement in bringing about the Babylonian kingdom, which God gave to Nebuchadnezzar years before the vision occurred that is recorded in Daniel 7. Daniel had said this directly to Nebuchadnezzar when he was given the dream of the image recorded in Daniel chapter 2. And if you'll remember what Daniel said to Nebuchadnezzar, he said, "You, O king, are a king of kings, for the God of heaven has given you a kingdom, power, strength, and glory." And we have that from Daniel chapter 2 and verse 37. In the vision recorded in Daniel 7, as Daniel watched the lion, he said that the wings of the lion were plucked off, and it was made to stand upon its hind legs like a man, and the heart of a man was given to it. If the wings of the lion represent that God had given the kingdom to Nebuchadnezzar, then their removal implies that God no longer approved of the kingdom of Babylon and would remove his protection of the kingdom. Of course, once that happens, it is only a matter of time before it will either fall apart or be conquered by another. No kingdom can stand without Yahuwah's, God's approval, the Creator's approval. Making the lion stand up on its hind legs and giving it a heart of a man suggests that the ruler of Babylon would someday change from being a fierce, courageous power to become a fearful man. Belshazzar certainly must have experienced great fear when he learned that his kingdom was taken from him and given to another. And we saw that in Daniel 5, how his knees, he was so afraid when he saw the handwriting on the wall that his knees smote one against another. That's what it says in the scripture. I mean, his knees literally knocked. He was so afraid. So we see how that picture, how he was given the heart of a man. He turned from a fierce lion into a fearful man. And that's actually what happened. The Medes and the Persians were already outside the gates of Babylon and entered the city later that night. Belshazzar was killed. He had a reason to be afraid because he did, even though, like the scripture says, even though he knew all these things, he still did not fear God. About 20 years before Daniel arrived in Babylon, which is in what is now Iraq, the city of Babylon was originally part of the Assyrian Empire, but it eventually rebelled against Assyria and then turned and engulfed it. Babylon simply took over Assyria, and there was only one kingdom that remained afterwards, which never split into smaller parts. Consequently, it is represented by a lion with one head and no horns, indicating it remained as one kingdom till its end. The lion could not represent Assyria, which no longer existed. The vision concerned kingdoms beginning at the time of Daniel, not before, so Assyria could not be represented by any of these beasts. Prophetic beasts in Daniel always begin with the time of the prophet and move forward from there. So why a lion to represent Babylon? Like I said, this goes to the characteristics principles. And let's go into this so we get a little bit more understanding. In the rules of interpretation for Daniel Revelation, there's a rule called the characteristics principle. This rule says that the things on a beast, other than its body, heads, and horns, which are used primarily to indicate the passage of time, and are therefore primary characteristics indicating behaviors of the kingdoms, how they would act, or how they would do certain things. And yeah, we did all this. We went through all these principles yesterday, so I don't see any reason to go through them again. So let's move on to our next scripture reference here. And that would be, he said, and behold, in chapter 7, verse 5, Daniel continues, and behold, another beast, a second, alike to a bear. And it raised up itself on one side, and it had three ribs in its mouth of it, between its teeth of it. And they said thus unto it, arise, devour much flesh. So let's take a look at the bear and see if we can just figure out who the bear is. Interpretation principles used. Position and succession of kingdoms and characteristics on the bear. The bear represented the Medo-Persia, which was a kingdom made up of Medes who lived in the northern part of what is today Iran, and Persia, which is the southern part of Iran today. Elam was the third part of this kingdom, but was only a minor player in the kingdom. On the bear, one shoulder, or possibly one paw, depending on the interpretation of the original language, was raised up, indicating one would be dominant over the other, which turned out to be the case. The Medes were dominant initially, but eventually the Persians came to dominate the Medes. The three ribs in the bear's mouth are believed to symbolize the three steps of conquest that Medo-Persia did in creating the empire. The three steps were the conquest of Lydia, Babylonia, and Egypt in that order. And this is a example of the characteristics principle. The three ribs tell us something about what this power would do. So why is a bear used to represent Medo-Persia? The use of a bear to represent Medo-Persia is another example of the use of the characteristics principle. Consider carefully this question. Why have a bear represent Medo-Persia? Why not a pig? How about a hippopotamus? Well, they're not predators. Both are dangerous. The hippo is rated as one of the most dangerous animals in all of Africa because it kills more people than just about any other animal. It has huge teeth and a massive mouth, so if it bites a person, it almost certainly will be fatal. So how about a fox? Well, that is a predator and would look rather cool. But still, there is the question, why use a bear? A bear is a very intelligent predatory animal, generally keeps to itself, but if you get in its way or he thinks that you are a threat to him, look out. He can be really dangerous. The bear tends to claw and bite, particularly on the head, but it may do this anywhere in the body. And when it attacks, it may strike with its paws. Hence, it tends to use brute force when it attacks to maim or kill. The attack method of the bear is clearly reliant upon brute strength. The Persians frequently did, in fact, use this message. There are a number of battles known from history in which the Persians brought huge armies to fight against their enemies. It seems that they figured sheer manpower would do the job, and it usually did. In one battle they had against the Greeks, they claimed that they brought 1 million men with them for the attack. Historians think that the number is exaggerated, but the claim probably was made to suggest that they came in huge numbers prepared for battle. So there may be an element of truth to the claim. This particular attack failed, and they lost the battle. But attacking like this is similar to the way a bear will do, which simply applies brute strength to get the job done, and is usually successful. The characteristic principle applies to the bear because the species itself is telling you something about its behavior, how it will do something, or what it will do. In this case, it is telling you how it will do battle with brute force, and that's its method of attack. So how do we know that the bear represents Medo-Persia? First, in history, it is clear that the Medes and the Persians conquered Babylon in 539 or 538 BC. The date depends on the source you read. The most accurate date seems to be the 539 BC. We're only talking a year difference here, so not really a whole lot to quibble about. Second, the context of the vision is that one kingdom follows another. Since Daniel was living under the Babylonian kingdom at the time of the vision, Daniel 7:1, in the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, it shows that the next kingdom to take over the area was clearly Medo-Persia. But some have argued that the explanation part of the vision, the four kingdoms, are four kings that shall arise from the earth. In Daniel 7:17, these great beasts, which are four kings, which shall arise out of the earth, meaning that the four kingdoms are, in fact, yet future to the time of this vision. This, indeed, while appealing to some, is incorrect. First, the vision parallels the vision given to Nebuchadnezzar of the large statue made of different metals, in which future empires of the region were symbolized by four different body parts, each made of a different metal. In this vision, Nebuchadnezzar is told that he is the head of gold, which means that the vision begins with Nebuchadnezzar in Babylon, not some future kingdom. Since the vision of Daniel parallels this dream of Nebuchadnezzar, it must be that the successive kingdoms are one and the same. And we'll pick up here after we get back from this break. You're listening to Cross the Border. That's the name of this program. And my website is crosstheborder.org.